Well,
To me, that's still, hold the line until a better name comes. I mean, what do you think of Hold the Line?
I think It's Not Funny is my favorite.
I don't like that one.
I like that one better.
Chip.
Can it be It's Not Funny, colon?
I don't know how to stop this.
That's actually funny, too.
just that.
It's not funny, colon. Well, yeah. It's not funny, colon.
That might be funnier for you guys.
Fuck you.
I haven't hit those yet.
It's not funny.
All
right, are we actually going? Are we doing this?
Yeah, don't worry. We're in the intro here.
Oh, okay. This is the intro?
Yeah, this
oh
my is God. The intro.
I'm going to have to cut this out again.
Taylor, why don't you start?
All right, so welcome back to It's Not Funny. This is Taylor.
Hold the line.
One of your co-hosts here. I am sort of the younger buck of the crowd here, and I'm a millennial, hashtag millennial. And we have a very special guest with us today, Dwayne Heisler from Columbia County.
Hey, hello!
That booming baritone we all know and love.
Hello, hello.
God, that's a smoky tequila.
So, what are you up to these days, Dwayne?
Oh, wow. Well, gosh. I don't know. It's kind of like a roulette wheel. I mean, you pick the topic. It's going on. It's happening here.
Yeah.
So lots of organizing work. A lot of the independent and indivisible groups are making that turn finally. Mm-hmm. That turn where they are voter registration, where they're starting to knock on doors, where they're realizing that the ultimate protest is to vote. And they're starting to get engaged. That's what I'm seeing, at least in NEPA, Northeast PA.
All right.
Excellent.
Are we in NEPA?
No, we are not in NEPA.
So technically, no.
Okay.
But my work kind of includes this, so right. I'm kind of dragging it in. I'm kind of expanding beyond.
Well, you're a good bridge builder. I mean, at least metaphorically. I've not seen any actual bridges you built.
So no, I haven't. I can't speak to that either.
Oh, I'm a demon with Legos.
This is Jordy, we're in my house with some bourbon and some snacky snacks that I made.
Mm. They're awesome.
They're mostly Spanish.
A lot of Spanish.
Yeah.
There's some fried apples I made up with. I made up a sauce that's whiskey, cardamom, and allberries. There's some Spanish olives, including albericanas. This is actually Wisconsin cheese.
Mm-hmm.
It's a French cheese. This is lomo, which is kind of like, I don't know what to call it. It's like
a prosciutto.
It's like prosciutto, yeah.
Yeah, it's excellent.
And some anchovies I brought back in a fat can that's like the size of like a grapefruit.
These anchovies and the lomo have been my favorite.
Yeah.
They're really good. Awesome. And these crackers, these thin ones here, what are these?
I don't know. They're sesame cracker.
Yeah, they're really good.
They're all really
good.
Mm. So, Chip, what are we talking
about
today?
Your phone, Chip. Who's the millennial?
What's happening?
We're going to go ahead and talk about...
You have to say your name.
They know who I am. I'm famous now. We're going to talk today about the incident in Las Vegas, the terrible, terrible tragedy.
Oh,
we've had enough of this stuff, but we're going to talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about a march, a solidarity rally that we had today. We're going to get into some stuff on Tim Murphy, the representative, and then Jordy wrote a great op-ed, and we're gonna bring that up. But let's start with Vegas.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah. So I'm not active with them, but the local Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, and it's important to remember they're not against guns; they demand action for gun sense, and that's a distinction they make, and we should all respect that.
Right.
what happened in Vegas? I mean, at some point, enough is enough. We need gun control. We need laws on the books, and we need them now. And I'm not willing to wait anymore. And it's getting to the point where we have to start thinking about. What do we do, and how do we do this? How do we support this effort?
I mean, and frankly, like this wouldn't have happened if we had stricter gun laws. And what they're trying to push through with the silencers right now—it's
amazing.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
just imagine what that would have been like if the people in the crowd did not hear where it was coming from, did not, it was silent, and that was one of the things that really. Tipped him off. That's very important. And the whole idea that everything that he did was legal up until when he pulled the trigger, every bullet he bought, every modification he made, every gun that he purchased
legal.
Was all legal. It makes me think that if bazookas were legal, would he have bought one?
Yeah.
And so where is the line, you know?
Yeah.
And we say that the line is like with machine guns, but yet we can still modify guns to make them like machine guns. There's something wrong there.
Mm. Well, one of the things I'm going to stop doing is I'm going to start debating with other people as if they have a point about, you know, they just, you know, the Second Amendment and all of these kinds of things. You're just an asshole with a gun. Period. And the fact that you are a gun fetishist, I wish you just own it. I wish they would just own their own emotions. But they hide behind these arguments, these really specious arguments about, you know, the Second Amendment and defending myself and all that crap. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of it. And we got to start having the honest conversation. You're just a gun fetishist.
Hmm. Yeah, I actually I forget who posted it, but I saw it on Facebook. It was a town hall debate that Obama did in 2012 during the re-election. And he was asked this question, you know, like, by some dude, you know, like, why do you want to take away our guns? And Obama had this really wonderful, you know, albeit professorial response about, you know, like, well, like, you know, this is a public health crisis in America,
right?
You know, and with every other public health crisis in America, you know, whether it's automobile deaths or smoking, you know, we have studied it and we've made legislative changes that have, you know, lessened the consequences of these public health tragedies. And right now the NRA has a total stranglehold on the legislative process and we're prohibited from doing the study that
the attorney general's forbidden for any kind of study. You know, when you said asshole with a gun, right? And so it makes me think about something that Congressman Murphy said about how there is this this idea, this empowerment that happens when you have a weapon, and especially, you know, the idea when you talk to people who shoot
at gun ranges. You're talking about Senator Murphy from Connecticut.
I'm sorry, Senator Murphy. Yes, I'm sorry, Senator Murphy. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of Newtown, really. Yeah. And so when you're at the range and you're shooting an automatic or a semi-automatic weapon, it feels good, you know, and there's this empowerment that happens. And so I kind of have to wonder, like, if all this guy could get was a revolver, would he have done what he did? All they could have gotten in Newtown was a knife, would he have done? There's a certain empowerment that happens when you are walking around with a pistol that's meant to take someone's life, and they have access to that. And so that's you know, a kind of an important discussion about, would it have even taken place if it were not for the weapons? And so many times you hear weapons don't do it. People do, but they're empowered by it.
Yeah.
I saw the quote, you know, nukes don't kill people. People kill people. Yeah. Right? I mean, at what point? I mean, this has become so silly.
Right.
Yeah.
I cannot take these conversations seriously anymore. You're an asshole with a gun.
Yeah.
And own it. And I'd respect you more if you did.
Wow. Yeah. Technology's not neutral.
Okay.
Right.
I'm going to say some different things. Maybe controversial. And we might have to cut this, but
we never cut it.
I know how to
do it live.
Like in these kinds of like silly superficial debates about guns and all of that, there's that, like, you know, the whole like, well, you know, a good man with a gun is the only thing that'll stop a bad man with a gun. Like, which cultural context is going to have the most good men with a gun? You know, you know. So
yeah.
So here it is, and my mom in 2005 or 2006 in her church in Knoxville, Tennessee, a guy walked in and opened fire and killed a couple people, and it was two unarmed Unitarians who are not known for being badasses who tackled him and stopped him. And last week there was in Mattoon High School, somewhere in Illinois, this teacher, sorry, I'm looking up her name. Anyway, this teacher, like, a kid walked into the school with a gun and started to open fire, and she just tackled him, and she didn't have a gun. And so, like, I feel like, given that we have a public health crisis where people walk in to these places with guns, we need to stop having these sort of silly, informed by the TV show 24 debates about what's going to happen, and actually talk about the kind of weird micro-specifics, right? Like where was he... you know, who could have stopped? Here's the other thing that I'm going to say is I think we should stop talking about this, because gun violence like it should be studied, but I think it's a I think it's sometimes a mistake to add up all of the gun violence and then infer back the policies. Like some gun violence is intimate violence, some is street crime, mm-hmm. some are these crazy yahoos, and you know he bought all those guns legally, right?
Yeah.
No closing of the gun show loophole, which I think should be done, would have stopped him. And so we get, when we talk about gun violence, I feel like sometimes we get pulled into like quicksand with the other side because they can start to bring up these facts and counterfactuals that don't work.
I think one of the most challenging things about this particular act is that it's hard, you know, we're having a difficult time, the media, people, like placing this into a box. Like, you know, this isn't like this guy was schizophrenic, you know, this wasn't a terrorist, this wasn't, or I mean, he was a terrorist, you know, he wasn't, you know, part of the Islamic State. You know, this isn't like he was some millionaire rich white dude, you know?
Yeah, that's really making us struggle, right? We're like trying to find the reason for that.
But this is what I'm saying. All of that, like finding the reason, I just think we should stop because to the extent to which this is, it's hard to generalize from one case, but there are enough mass shootings of this kind in American history that we know that we suffer from this more than others. And I think it's a bit of a copycat thing, right? Because every time it gets talked about, whatever goes on in these people's heads, and at some level, I'm like, of course you have to report on it, but this like long drawn out, you know, in public discourse, like soul searching, what are we doing as a nation? I just honestly, I think we need to stop. And we need to take that energy and maybe work on other gun sense things. So that's what I said that may be controversial. I think, honestly, I think we should stop talking about this guy and his motivation.
And we should also stop letting them frame the argument, okay?
Yeah.
The NRA is a terrorist organization, period. Okay? And you can't take these guys seriously anymore. You can't say these are legitimate people trying to protect. You're a terrorist organization, period. You don't get to, you don't. We have to start framing the debate in our terms.
Well, speaking about framing the debate, I'm always interested when the conservative side ends up saying something like, well, look at all the conservative, or look at all the gun laws that are in Chicago and all the killings that happen there. And the fact of the matter is that I bet you if we asked them, well, do you think that if they loosened up the laws and allowed you to buy machine guns, would that increase the deaths in Chicago or make it less? And it's kind of, you know, and so when you reduce it to the ridiculous, the fact is that they are constantly taking things out of context, trying to move it, and it doesn't make sense when you think about it for just a moment.
For first of all, the Chicago thing is racial. They bring that up because of
course
race.
It's a dog whistle.
And it's really cheap. And again, it comes back to I'm getting tired of debating with these punks.
Yeah,
you're a punk with a gun.
You know, to move along, but you know, to bring this to something concrete, I want to give a big thank you to Senator Jean Yaw for coming out in support of Senate Bill 501, which is this bill that Mom's Man is pushing right now, and it basically shortens the length that domestic abusers need to turn in their guns. It currently in Pennsylvania, it's 60 days. They want to lessen that to 24 hours. And they also, like, you'll be mandated to turn in your gun to a law enforcement agent. Right now, you can just surrender your gun to your brother-in-law or something. So thank you, Jean Yaw, for supporting this. It's in the Judicial Committee. I hope that Senator Gordner, if he's listening to this, or some member of his staff, comes out in support of this. I know that people have been making a lot of calls to his office. Send a lot of postcards, and we need rational policymakers to actually make some change on this issue.
It's one of the few issues in this country that receives over 80% of Americans support gun control, and we can't have it. And enough is enough. These punks need to go. Moving on.
Well, there's a nice segue because of what we were just at, right? The solidarity.
So today in Lewisburg, there was an event coordinated between the town of Lewisburg and Bucknell University, the Solidarity March and Rally. And it's always a good event. This is the 17th year or 18th year, they say?
I don't even know.
It's been going a long time.
Very powerful event, a lot of good speakers. I really appreciated Amanda Wooden calling out Bucknell, standing 20 feet away from Brofman.
Who's the president of Bucknell.
Who's the president of Bucknell. I really, really appreciate what Amanda did.
She was really passionate about climate control.
She's passionate. Yeah. It took a lot of courage to say that.
St. Olaf College got a shout-out.
Yeah.
I was standing next to Jordy and happily pointed that out.
Yeah. We have a little We both went to different colleges. We went to different colleges in the same town, so we...
Oh, okay.
Carlton's a little bit better than St. Olaf.
I don't know about that.
Ouch! Depends. I mean, if you want to study Swedish or Norwegian, St. Olaf is definitely a place to go.
All right, well, we'll have a separate podcast dedicated solely to the Carlton St. Olaf.
The huge rivalry that is Carlton St. Olaf.
It's really not. Rivalry. It's not really.
Yeah, the huge...
It's not a big...
But we had a...
huge...
Yeah. But we had a solidarity march, and I'd say there were 500 people there. Does that sound...
Yeah.
That sounds
right. I guessed 400, but...
Yeah.
I thought it might have been more than 500.
Yeah. I kind of did a count in a way, like counting tens and counting up rows, and it was definitely over four. I was guessing around
plus,
five.
Plus, there's a little bit of circulation, right? So yeah, if we were counting totally. Everybody who was there...
Yeah, there was some in and out that was happening there.
Yeah, but even I think there were probably between 300 and 400 Bucknell students there, maybe 500, which is
just students,
which is a significant portion of the
student
school.
Heavy.
That's like maybe 10 to 20% of the student body, which is pretty good.
All right, wow. Let's maybe go around and say something specific we liked about it, and then we can maybe move to
something else.
No constructive feedback, if we want to.
Okay, I mean, what I liked about it, I liked Amanda. I liked her calling out the president of the university right there in front of everybody.
Right.
I think what John had to say John Brotman, I'm sorry, you're right, the president. I wasn't really moved by anything he had to say, but...
Well, but it was props nice. For showing up.
Props for showing up.
He wasn't the best.
No.
The students were great. I thought the students did a really good job. You know, and it's a good event. I was really proud of Moms Demand Action.
Yeah, front and center.
You know? So, you know, I think what we're all hoping is that this leads to some sort of action from the people who showed up, you know, and that we can kind of capture that a little bit.
How many voter registration forms did you get?
I collected 15 voter registrations.
Really? It seemed like more. But
yeah, no, I thought there were more. It was kind of, I had to leave near the end of it, and it was, I couldn't really register anybody on the march over, because they were like, I don't want to trip and fall, and I was like, I get that. And then it was just sort of, it's sort of difficult to do it while it was going on.
It was a challenging event for that, because you had speakers, and you didn't want to interrupt them, and people were paying attention to what was being said. And
I was trying to register somebody, and it was the moment of silence. I was like, oh.
Yeah, so that's a challenging environment to do it like that.
It was. I think that if I had been there for longer, I think I could have gotten a lot of people at the end. And maybe if we'd had like more of a organized effort. I kind of just threw a bunch of clipboards in my backpack as I was leaving.
All right, well, let me be a curmudgeon.
Okay. Okay,
great. And this may ruin my political career in this town. Like, it's just too long. Like, I cannot...
Yep. They needed a stage manager.
And I want to know, like, for people who were there... Like, I went because I felt like I needed to go. And I already knew that I had a pretty good idea of what kinds of things would be said. And, you know, to spend, what was like, an hour and a half total or more?
Yeah.
Feeling like I'm in this like this is the kind of thing that I think makes some young people maybe even become conservative. Like, I felt this norm of like, you have to clap with everything whether or not you agree, and every issue is equally important, and I was just like, I don't need my consciousness raised, I don't need to feel solidarity with all these people. What I want is the email of all these people, and I want to know what steps they want to take. Like, I would rather spend an hour and a half saying, you know, like, if I could, like, speed dating each person there, or as many as I could, and saying, what are you interested in? What are your skills? What is your time frame? Let's plug you in.
And
instead it was this, like, call to arms. Yeah. Okay, so that's my first bitch. My second bitch is...
Well, I'm going to say real quick, Democrats have to stop doing kumbaya. Love will not save the day. It's true.
Okay, so my second bitch...
Chip, quote, love will not save the day.
It won't. They keep thinking they're going to give everybody a hug and it'll be fine, and that's not...
What, was this a Democratic event?
No, it wasn't.
It's not.
But sometimes when you use a Democrat, leftist, progressive, kind of interchangeably.
What's your second point?
My second point is, it's this, like, moment where, like, weirdly... Like, that crowd was a third people of color, a quarter, maybe, which is great. That is not the demographics of Bucknell. It is not the demographics of Lewisburg. I looked this up. I think Union County is 92% white or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is also inflated because they include the prison population.
Okay, all right. And so it's this, it seems like this moment of amazing town-gown unity. And then, like... but it's not. It's theater. It's like a Potemkin village. Like, like, I mean, yes, Bucknell students volunteer in the community and Bucknell care about community and all that. That's true. But like, where's the follow through, right? And there are these powerful. There's a powerful young black woman sang a powerful song about police violence, and you know, a Jordanian student rapped in English. I'm blown away. How in the hell did your English get so good that you could rap? I mean, that takes like mad English skills.
Where is he? He's from Jordan.
He told me he's from Jordan.
Yeah.
Anyway. And so I don't know. It's like
probably went to American school.
Yeah, whatever. But I'm just saying that like it's this like everybody's patting each other on the back and feeling very righteous about how everybody's doing the right thing. And you know, does how much effort went into that relative to how many concrete actions come out of it? And so yeah, those are my two bitches.
Well, first, real quick, I'm going to add. I completely agree with you, Jordy. Actually, the kumbaya shit has got to stop. And I'm kidding, of course. But secondly, yeah, your political career is definitely over. Yeah.
So
I said that on a recording.
I think there wasn't enough rally in the solidarity rally.
I love that. It
was kind of depressing a little bit. And, you know, so you mentioned how it wasn't really a good venue for doing voter registration.
Yeah.
You mentioned how it was too long. And you're like, there's too much, you know, this hug. Imagine if in the center of it, there would have been some really good kick-ass music, and there was this little break where you could go visit the vendors and get registered and buy a t-shirt and get a sign that says no hate here at our home, and and just give the audience a little bit of a break, and then come back, you know, a little bit energized, you know? Well, like, it needed the stretch in the football, in the baseball game, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, I marched over, and that was also a little bit...
Hold on, he just tried to say seventh-inning stretch in the football game.
I know. I am very ball-challenged.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Oh, that's so funny. It's so many levels. Guess your marriage isn't working out.
Yeah, right?
Hey. Get out of my head. No.
No. We'll edit that out.
Oh my gosh. Now I have to turn my head and cough or something.
I felt like the wind was knocked out of my sails as soon as I entered into Huffnagle Park from the rally, which was kind of a bummer, but
well,
I completely agree with
everyone was sitting down. Like I arrived and I thought rally, and then I saw everyone kind of sitting in the bleachers, and I was like, oh, well, maybe it's not that kind of thing.
It felt like a church service.
I mean, it's like we're aiming for a participatory democracy, you know, where everybody has a say and people get involved. And that was not demonstrative of that.
No.
The event I don't know.
I saw something on social media, you know, you can keep your goddamn prayers. It's time for policy change. You know, and that's what today, I mean, it felt like we all just kind of came together.
But
you know, we all threw up a prayer to the invisible guy, and now it's all fixed. And that doesn't do jack shit. And I'm with everybody. I think they need to start accepting. You know, Cindy tries so hard to be nonpartisan, and we all love her to death. But I'm with everything that you guys are saying. There should have been a policy table. Here's how you can get involved. Write this letter. Yeah. Make this call.
It was sort of a missed organizing opportunity.
Absolutely.
There were so many. Like, Cindy does such a phenomenal job with it, and it was kind of a bummer to see all of those Bucknell students that needed to register vote and to, you know. No,
there should have been a big sign with voter registration.
I would love to do a, like, you know, 1 minute, you know, robocall to people who are there, you know, how valuable is this to you? Because maybe 90% of them, you know, it was really valuable to be there and to feel solid. Like some people feel that way, you know, like I need to know that I'm not alone. And
it's telling, though, that almost between every break towards the end, you lost another 10% of the
crowd.
There
were some people that were leaving then.
And I mean, so if you can't even keep people's attentions, if you can't even do that for an hour after something like Las Vegas, then you're not doing it right.
If you're going to keep the same format, I think somebody needs to be more of a directive MC and say, today we're going to have seven awesome speakers, and they're all about how we stop hate in different ways.
Or print a program or something.
Yeah. Something because it just seemed really inchoate.
All about
it's a great idea.
I love inchoate.
And we love those people. It's a great idea. We love those people, but we all think it could be little bit more.
I've dragged you all down because if Cindy hears this, we are...
No, you know what? You know, everything that we've said here, this is after we said what an amazing event it was. I mean, look what
we
did.
It was an amazing event.
There were hundreds of people that showed up in that little park.
Right.
You had student participation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You had some amazing amazing, talented speakers get up there and give their all, speaking passionately and speaking from their heart. But something that you said, Chip, you know, about prayer, back when we were doing the, back when the Pulse shooting happened, I was giving a speech, and I called it, We Need More Than Prayer. Mm-hmm. Prayer's not good enough, you know, it's not good enough to have a moment of silence.
Right.
It's not about a moment of silence, it's about a moment of speaking out, and that's what needs to happen.
You can take your prayer and shove it.
You know, you always take something and just take a twist.
Just a little too far,
A little bit that way.
Well, that's
is that what
we
you got out of it?
That's
you
what know, we need.
It, I'm just call it podcast Over the Line.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
you're in the over the line corner.
You know what? I think as a country, we should all be over the fucking line.
Cross the line.
We should all be over the line right now. I don't understand. What the hell?
You see this line?
Cross
you're
it.
You're over there.
Cross it. See, the line is a dot to you.
Oh my god, that's like a huge. This whole tablecloth is giant.
It's funny
lines.
That you said you see this line.
On you're so
line.
Far past the line.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
Let's move on.
Okay, all right.
Tim Murphy. I don't want to spend too much time on this.
I don't even know who he is.
This just happened today, right?
Yeah.
It just happened today.
Go ahead, tell us about it.
It's topical.
CNN ain't got nothing on us.
Oh, wait till you hear this.
Yeah. Well, you guys, I'm just going to pull up the text messages from my.
Yeah, go ahead, pull it up.
We only need
He's a congressman from Allegheny County, right?
Southwestern PA.
Southwestern PA, yep. So, not quite in the city, but parts of it, well, it's all gerrymandered out. Well, everywhere in the state, but...
Okay, what does that mean?
This gutless punk.
So basically, like 2 weeks ago, or maybe it was a week ago, I don't know. It came out that he had an affair, and you know, in normal politics, that would have been a bombshell. But in post November 2016, that was like, you know, whatever.
right.
You know, right. Really, you know, it's his marital life. I don't.
Was his mistress Slovenian? Because.
But
I asked you who she was, but it didn't matter. What matters is what's said.
Shannon Edwards is her name.
That doesn't sound very Slovenian.
No. But anyway, so honestly, like to say something really, you know, clear here, I really don't care, if Congressman Murphy is having an affair. It's not about that.
Right.
But the big bombshell that dropped today was apparently Sharon Edwards released some text messages that showing that Murphy had asked Edwards to get an abortion during a pregnancy scare. She didn't end up being pregnant. But this man is like super Republican, a co-sponsor of the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. You know, which would ban abortions after 20 weeks, except in cases of incest and rape. Just a very pro-life dude. And here are the text message quotes.
So this is Senator Congressman Murphy.
This is Congressman Murphy from PA 18. So this is Sharon, and you have zero issue posting your pro-life stance all over the place when you had no issue asking me. To abort our unborn child just last week when we thought that was one of the options. Edwards wrote in text message. I'm reading this from Politics PA.
Wait, I'm sorry, I couldn't follow. You gotta do that again.
Okay.
Very clear.
So
he's saying to her?
No. This is Sharon Edwards Congressman Murphy.
Okay.
Quote, and you have zero issue posting your pro-life stance all over the place when you have no issue asking me to abort our unborn child just last week when we thought that was one of our options. And then he apparently texted back. I get what you say about my March for Life messages. I've never written them. Staff does them.
Oh.
I read them and winced. I told staff, don't write anymore.
Liar.
Yeah. So.
You know, it's just so
not
typical,
about his staff,
isn't it?
About
no,
what he told them.
It's about what money ends up in his pocket, you know, and how he gets reelected and how he's playing to his base. He has no authority. He has no moral.
He has no moral authority.
I don't think it was money that got in his pocket. I think something else got in his pocket.
Well, that too, perhaps, you know, but I mean.
I think he should resign.
No integrity. No integrity. I don't understand how the moral Republican Party can vote for a man who is a champion for them, who just told his wife or his girlfriend, his mistress, that she should get an abortion.
You know, I'm sick of the party of quote unquote family values. Yeah. You know, this is bullshit. Yeah, no. You know, this is the same party that'll shoot down any sort of you know, family medical leave or, you know, increased minimum wage.
Yeah. Children's health insurance.
Health care. Yeah.
Well, that's because the unborn babies are more innocent.
Yeah. These are no family values.
Yeah. Exactly. This one's guilty. Guilty of probably ruining his career.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the whole reason why he wants to abort that child, right, is because he may lose his job supposedly representing us. You know, that's bullshit.
It's bullshit. He has no integrity.
None.
He
needs to resign. He doesn't have enough integrity to resign. That would actually require integrity.
Mm-hmm. He's
a gutless punk.
Thank you. We were struggling for the word.
Tequila you drink, man, the shorter your sentences get. Punk.
Gutless.
Just gutless punk.
In 5 minutes, he's going to be punk.
He's a punk.
Not even he's a punk.
Oh my God.
I would love to actually go back to, like, I don't know, the 80s or something, and, like, look at each, like, sex scandal and, like, the outcome. Because in my head, some people, and I can't do the details, but, like, some people resign way before other people. You know what I mean? In terms of, like, how bad it looks or whatever. That would be interesting to see, right? And also by party.
Yeah.
Because it seems like Republicans will hold on longer. But I'm not going to say that. And I'm sure as hell not going to go to bat for Democrats.
They hold on longer and they double down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Or like the sort of common trope that it's Republican congressmen who get busted in airport bathrooms, you know.
Oh, those are wide stances, you know. Cut them a break.
But is it like empirically more often Republicans? Like, I think so. I realize that's a different question. But.
I don't know. I don't know.
It is.
I have such a partisan lens that I believe that, but I question my...
This is a time when statistics don't, you know, facts don't matter, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it just certainly seems to me that if you're caught with your pants down in a stall, you're a Republican.
Like that guy in, was he the governor of Alabama or Georgia who, like, said he went on the Appalachian Trail and he's really with his mistress?
Oh, that was Sanford in South Carolina.
Yeah, where'd he go? He went to, like, South America or something.
Yeah. Argentina, I think.
Yeah, he's back in the United States House of Representatives.
I don't care about his travel docket.
By the way.
Unbelievable.
He's a congressman now.
Well, anyway. So
he's actually a good dude.
I'll say it here first. I don't know who else has said it, but I'm gonna say it here first. Tim Murphy needs to resign. No integrity.
he's a gutless punk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think Jordy's pouring cheap whiskey into the Woodford Reserve bottle. This does not taste
good. What are you doing, man? This doesn't seem right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I made my own.
Murphy needs to go before he gets hurt.
All right,
Chip. Come on.
That's the
Let's take the whiskey away from Chip.
Yeah.
The whiskey has now been, it's empty. This is not good.
It's Jordy's op-ed.
All right.
Yeah.
Jordy wrote an op-ed.
A little bit of context. Op-ed. So 2 weeks ago, roughly, our local newspaper, the Daily Item, with the local League of Women Voters, which is super active, they put together...
His mother-in-law is president.
Which is my mother-in-law is the president.
Oh, full disclosure.
Full disclosure. And she, full disclosure to her, is very good about drawing clear boundaries. You know, she's like, I can't be seen with you in public. You're a candidate. I think she just didn't want to be seen with me in public.
Right.
Anyway, so they had this town hall that was, like, I think the title was something like Media Transparency and Fake News, or Media Fake News and Democracy. And, like, huge props to the Daily Item and the League of Women Voters for organizing this. And this is inside information. So it turns out, I guess I can say this, like, most of the people there were there because the League, like, got them and brought them. So I think the Daily Item is, like, frustrated that, and they took out full page ads, which is a pretty big.
Wow, it's a big expense.
It's a big expense, like 6 or 7, and they're doing a series of these this next week as local government, and not that many people responded. And so that's just, like, that's just deflating about, right, how much people care.
It's hard to cut through the noise.
I'm not going to take out a full page ad. I'm not going to take out a full page ad in the Daily Item.
Oh, because it doesn't work, yeah.
Well, you know, I actually was flipping through it the other day, and it's just like, I don't even look at that, you know? That's not where my eye goes.
Yeah. That's all. Anyway,
ahead, yeah.
So they brought in a keynote speaker.
You mean you read and you don't look at the pictures?
No, I read and I don't.
I know what he means. It's like if it's a full page ad.
I'm not going to read it.
I wouldn't even bother.
I know, it's rough advertising.
And so they had a keynote speaker from community college, Harrisburg Community College, and she was talking about fake news, and which is fine and good, and I'm glad she did that. And she happened to. She also mentioned cognitive bias. Now, she had a perspective which I don't share, which is that, you know, people have cognitive bias, and she seemed to be implying that there's some place you can get to where you don't have it. And I actually think we all have cognitive bias all the time, and the best you can do is be aware of it, surface it, and try and get information from other perspectives. But that aside, so she was talking about this issue of cognitive bias. And then she said,
she was quoting some research from the Pew Charitable Trust's study of they have a center on journalism which does great research, and she said 60% of Facebook users, they found, get all of their news from Facebook. And I could feel the whole audience, and it was mostly like 50 to 70 year olds, you know, good government types, probably liberals, kind of go collectively, like, I knew it, right? Like, you could see it click. Like all these people are, you know, are
sitting
dumb.
On Facebook.
It's on Facebook, and they're just believing whatever shit goes up and all of that. And even honestly myself, I was a little bit like, wow, like, I didn't know. Like, that's interesting. And then, but then I thought a little bit more. I was like, you know, that sounds very high. And I went and I looked it up. And as it turns out, she, honest mistake, but she misquoted it, right? 60% of Facebook users get news from Facebook. And then within that, the category
actually seems low to me.
That actually does seem low. Mm. That actually is the opposite. It's like they can't even be bothered to use Facebook for any kind of news. Like, they didn't hear about the Las Vegas shooting.
I only look at news.
Right. Yeah, I have a little story about that too that goes that. So I used this as an opportunity to write an op-ed that the Daily Item, you know, was kind of to publish. And I wasn't really attacking the keynote speaker. What I was saying was, right, like, she provided an ironic moment of cognitive bias. Everybody in that room was willing to believe,
right
that social media is eroding democracy.
Going on there.
Yeah. But I also want to be careful to not to say that, like, it's not like Facebook. I'm not like a Facebook cheerleader. I'm not like, oh, it's great, you know. And maybe we can talk about this in a later podcast. Yeah. But, like, the role of Facebook in particular in social media and the Russian hacking of the election, or maybe hacking isn't the right, like, maybe that's too partisan, but the Russian influence in the election is a real thing, but that's different. Like, fake news, like, has already been corrupted or co-opted. You know, Trump uses it about news he doesn't like, whereas it is literally, it's becoming clear that there were Russian operations to weaponize information and to use literally maliciously fake news. And so we need, like, a whole tech. Okay, hold on. Time out. Chip, you just poured bourbon from my glass to your glass. That is a red card.
Yeah, take a flag, take a hike. Yeah.
You are off the field.
Offsides. He's offsides. It's a ball game, right?
He looked at you, and then he did it.
Wow, and you didn't even, like, ask me. What?
No, he was trying to sneak it in while you were, like, in the middle of your whole.
Sneaking in while I'm looking.
It's like,
this.
It's what happens when you dialogue. You hit him in the face, right? You punch him when they're dialoguing. That's what you do.
I saw the whole thing happen. Jeez, and Cody's born it back.
Oh, man.
You guys are gonna.
This is really wrong.
So it was fun to write.
So I have a question, though. When you're saying you saw the study, when they're saying that they get it from Facebook, but I mean, a lot of times, don't you click on something and it brings you to the New York Times,
exactly,
or to the Chicago
Dwayne, and honestly, Dwayne did not set this up. That's perfect, because then the next thing they talked about a little bit later, actually not the next thing, but it came up, was this story about this guy. I think his name was Ed, I don't remember, his last name was Lee, I think it was Edward Lee, or maybe Robert Lee, who is an ESPN football announcer. I don't know if anybody saw this. And right after the Charlottesville racism Nazi stuff, this story went viral that quote unquote ESPN had fired him to avoid controversy, which is not true. He came to ESPN. He does work for ESPN.
Okay.
And he said, the news release from ESPN was Robert Lee and ESPN have mutually agreed to move him to another game so that he's not calling that game. And they were trying to actually preempt any stupidity, and it got picked up, I think, by Fox News. I have to double check that. So what I wanted to say to your point about Facebook, I only learned the truth about that because a friend of mine on Facebook who's a big sports fan, I saw people talking about it, and I actually thought, oh, ESPN, really? Like, no, like, don't do that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, and he put in the comments, no, that's not true. So, of course, there's good news on Facebook, too. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the problems. I offered to them to write more op-eds, and they haven't taken me up on it. But I think the next one would be, what is fake news versus news you disagree with? Versus the deeper thing, which is an issue, Doug Orbacher, who's a friend of ours and was talking about back in the Vietnam era, where there would be a protest, and we see this now too, that would say, you know, violent protest against the war, when there could have been 200,000 people marching to Vietnam and 10 people who threw a rock.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
So wasn't there just through the Active Community Trainers, and they just do a program on fake news? There's a little plug there.
Yeah, it is a little plug. It was great. A great program, Mary Jean Moser.
I know she did a lot of research.
It was
good. She goes crazy with her research, right? Well, she's a librarian, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, she goes crazy with her sources and her. Well, if you're doing a presentation on fake news, you got to make sure that you don't have any fake news.
Oh, yeah, get it right.
She's friends with the librarian. She used to work in the library, but
she did work there, though.
She worked there. Okay. She worked for a different department about now, but she did an amazing job and had some really good tools. If we had show notes, I know some podcasts do, we could put a link to it. But if you go to activecommunitytraining.org, org, all one word, Active Community Training. You can get the link to her slides.
Good, good.
You know, I think this goes back to something that I think we're dealing with. You know, I think the invention of the internet is like Gutenberg printer press level. And, you know, it's going to take us a long time to figure out how to handle our shit on social media.
Yeah.
You know, and this is part of it.
For sure. It's also
going to take us a while.
It's also a fuzzy, you know, it was, I feel like people sometimes come to it with a sort of public versus private space, and they berate people for saying, like, well, why would you put that on Facebook? You know, you're so stupid. Like, why would you put that? You know, don't you know the whole world can see that? I'm like, it's not quite public and it's not quite private. You know, if I put a post on Facebook, or especially Facebook, and I'm like, oh, I think my friends are going to see this, I'm not always completely aware of who the audience is. And I don't know. I just feel like that's a very knee-jerk and not very sophisticated response to be like, you know, you're responsible for everything you put on Facebook. Like, we have technology that is infinitely searchable and totally recordable. Everything is recorded and everything's searchable. I'm like way off on another thing now, you know. And so what does privacy mean in that world? Like, privacy, when you can go into your house, we can have this, if we didn't have the podcast on, we could have this conversation, no one would know about it.
Yeah.
Right? But when you put those conversations in a medium, Facebook or social media, where it's searchable, you know, I think it's too much of a burden to put on people. Like, you should have known that somebody would have looked at that. I'm like, that's stupid. The burden should be on who is reading and watching, right? Like, should you be reading this and making judgments, not should the person who posted it? And I'll give you a quick example. I had a student at Bucknell several years ago who told me for a job interview, she went in and the person who was interviewing her demanded her Facebook username and password because she wanted to see what this person put on Facebook.
What?
Whoa.
I could not. I was like, that must
be. You know, another tangential thing, but not tangential to this.
Right.
I was at a bar the other day and I was playing pool in Philly.
Are you old enough to be at a bar?
Yeah. Oh, shit. Sorry, Jordy.
No one can see you.
So I was there, and the management was there, and they were talking with all of the bartenders, and they were saying, like, and remember, you know, every shift, do at least 3 posts about the bar on your social media platforms.
Oh.
I know. And I was like, wait a minute here. Like, you know, that's labor. That's not being compensated for. You know, that, you know, and also, you know, you've taken time to call a social media presence, and that now you're asking to use that without any compensation for it. Like,
or even your permission.
It's fake news. If you think about it,
yeah,
you know, it's not originating from the person. You know what? No. I'm a big Covey fan, and one of the Stephen Covey, but one of the 7 habits of highly effective people. I mean, one of the ideas is being loyal to the absent. In other words, you should never post anything on Facebook that you wouldn't say to someone if you're looking right at them, to anyone. And that would be to anyone. So that's kind of, if you follow that rule, like if you're willing to say that to anyone, to a child, to your grandmother, to, you know, your coworkers, then maybe it belongs there. Like, maybe, I mean, that's the, because anyone can see it. And I think that's being very responsible. Yeah, being loyal to the absent.
See, I like the idea because you're talking about other people, but when it's about yourself, I'm going to go back to what I was saying earlier, which is, you know, when I, for example, on Facebook, I might post something about something I think about politics or sports or whatever. I can't remember who the 1,400 people that I'm connected to are. And if one of them didn't want to know that or didn't want to have that shared, I feel like that's too much of a burden on me, right? Like, if the burden is always on the poster.
Yeah. Well, I don't want grandma to see this, you know?
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I did start posting a lot less once my kids got Facebook. Yeah. Although now that's like old person technology for them. They don't use Facebook anymore.
Yeah.
Snapchat. We've really wandered into.
Yeah, you know, we're way over the limit on the. We're like
over the line.
Over the line.
Okay, that's Dwayne, not funny.
Dwayne, we'd
it's
like to thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you, Dwayne. For
our third podcast.
Third podcast. Wow, that's amazing. So, how are you distributing this? We're.
Viewers can
viewers listeners
listeners can catch us on SoundCloud.
We're on SoundCloud. That's the only platform. I mean, up to, we're still recording, right? Like, up to now, like, we haven't had a full conversation about, do we want to roll this out and see what we get, or do we want like a select audience and get feedback before we change the format?
My personal opinion is maybe like the first 5 will just be limited release, and then after that we'll maybe kick into something, you know, that's more concentrated and more.
What's the lockdown your format?
Yeah. I mean, what's really funny to me is we had a hub. We're still recording, but that's fine. We had a hub facilitators, like, strategic planning thing, and I led us through a thing about priorities, and it was 1, 2, 3. Like, 1, right now, 2, important, 3, when we have time. And one of the only things in the three category was make a podcast.
Yeah.
That was on a Saturday. The following Monday, we made the first podcast. Which is really, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a Taylor was motivated, and so you were like...
I wanted it. Well, actually, I don't know how it came about, really.
Well, you know, it's easy to do. It could have incredible benefit. So it's part of like strategic doing.
I mean, partly it was, I was like, this is fun for me. This is why I do going to some rallies.
What'd you say? I'm sorry, what'd you say?
It's more fun than going to some rallies.
Oh, and on that note, I think we'll stop. All right.
Why are you on your phone the whole goddamn time? Are you still recording?
Are you still recording? Because I'm about to curse Jordy out.
You're such a goddamn millennial.
Until next week. This is Hold the Line. You get him